You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, spirit, community, economy, and environment, all six areas of the healthful living model. You can learn more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living. And I'm here today with my friend and colleague, Michael White. His website is choosepeacenow.net. Michael's been on the show in the past. He is a reporter and writer about global peace issues and a number of other fascinating subjects. And just want to say hi to Michael.
Thank you for having me on the show, Martin.
Thanks for connecting with me today. Today we're going to really get into my greatest and most fascinating subject and things that I'd love to talk about the most, which is really a broader understanding of the nature of our reality and changing and shifting world and evolution of human consciousness and topics of enlightenment and wherever else our discussion may go today with a fascinating human being who'll be joining us on the line in just a few moments. His name is Louis-Dor Dempry. He's also known as Bhagavan Sri Pranananda. And I was introduced to Pranananda through Michael a couple of months ago and have been reviewing his website and a lot of his information about what he is bringing forth in the world and who he is as an individual. And I'm just absolutely fascinated and delighted to bring you today him personally on the show, connecting with Michael and I, and to bring forth his message. What is he sharing? What is he bringing forth as an enlightened master who teaches using contemporary and practical tools and examples from his own life's journey to self-realization? And he teaches how to attain mastery over our lives and attaining lasting inner peace and joy. Louis' illuminating discourses, meditations, and ceremonies have brought profound transformation to thousands of people of all spiritual and religious paths from all social, economic, and varied cultural backgrounds. His non-denominational timeless expressions of divine truth and love guide us on how to create peace, unity, tolerance, compassion, humility, and love amongst the nations and peoples of the world. And he operates, he has an ashram down in Southern California and various places around the world that we'll hear more of, as well as the Louis-Dor Dempry Foundation, which is a global nonprofit educational organization dedicated to sharing the teachings and humanitarian works of Louis-Dor Dempry, Bhagavan Sri Pranananda. Its mission is to help people remember and restore their inherent divinity and to walk in this world as unconditional love. When I first read that mission, I mean, it just made me go, inside, and I really wanted to connect with him. Now, Michael, you had the opportunity to spend some time with Pranananda here in San Francisco recently, yeah?
Yes, we had a residential retreat, and that was about a month ago, and it was not just me, but several of my friends all had very profound experiences of him, and he really showed up as a being who is living by example, mm-hmm. something that so many of us are all aspiring to, which is enlightenment, or the experience of actually being love, being God, or God presence all the time. And so being in front of an example of living love all the time is very empowering, very enlightening. There's certainly a lot that we can learn from listening to what he has to say.
And I imagine there's a feeling that you must have experienced.
Just it was very heart-opening.
Yeah, yeah. Let's welcome Louis to the line. Are you there?
I am. Hi. Good day. Thank you, Martin, for having me on your show, and thank you, Michael. I feel very blessed and very privileged and honored to be part of this, so I can't tell you that enough, so I wanted to start with that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and you know, we could begin really anywhere, but let's just really have you begin with a bit about yourself, your ministry, and then let's segue a little bit into this broader topic of self-realization and enlightenment, this notion.
Alrighty. Where would you like me to begin?
About your ministry and what you're bringing forth.
Well, I was listening to you on the air as you were just introducing, and you said a mouthful. You said it so beautifully. I thought to myself, my goodness, that's you spoke it so perfectly. Who I am and what I do is to walk in this world as pure love and to remind people by example that everyone is not only created in God's image, but that everyone has the fullness of God living inside of them. And what I do with people is, hopefully, and many have told me they've had that experience, and I see it, is give them first the direct experience of God through darshan, through being in the presence, as Michael described, and then, it, you know, when that personal experience, whether it's, you know, through physical seeing or hearing the voice or whatever, once that, you know, has happened, then I also walk in the world to give people tools so that they can purify all the dross, all the distortion, all the molecules and cells within their being that are not resonating as pure unconditional love. And I do that through many, many different means so that people can go home and be a practice the presence. And the more you practice it, the more you become it. So that's really what it's all about. And then people come, you know, people will come and see me and come to the Wellspring to get a big infusion and to get receive a lot of light and love and reminders of who they are by seeing that reflection. But then they go home and they say, wow, now I have this and this and this. Now I know how I can heal my anger. Now I know how I can become greater compassion. Now I have tangible, visceral examples and tools to become pure love, to become self-mastery itself. And what I strive to do is to present it in a way that does transcend all dogmas, all religions, all races, creeds, intelligence, economic status, birthright, that anybody could walk in off the street, and the most they would possibly need is a translator if I couldn't speak their language, but that's it. You don't have to be well-read, you don't have to have a lineage, you don't have to be of a religion. In fact, not only that, but anyone from any religion would only feel sourced and embellished by what I speak and who I am. It's, you know, because all religions came from the same place. They all came from the essence of God. I have a saying that if you took all the religions of the world and put them in a pot of boiling water for an hour, at the end of that hour you'd have the same essence, the same seeds at the bottom, at the end. And it's bringing people back to that, to remember that we are all one, and we are all love.
Well, certainly love is a universal concept. Nobody can claim ownership of it or any uniqueness of its of how it should be brought forth, which is why I love that we were able to speak about this, appreciate that we're able to speak about this in a way that that is universal, that can resonate with whomever you are and wherever you are and whatever you currently believe about the things.
It's really important for people, because the truth is that at the end of every sincere path, God waits. You know, how you come is not as important as that you come to the altar of God. And even not even using the name God. It doesn't even matter. It's, as you said, love is the essence of all creation. So if some people don't like even using the word God. I happen to love that word, but if some people come to me, they say light, they say spirit, they say the divine, they say the oneness, the isness. It doesn't really matter. Only love is real, period. Call it a rose by any other name is still a rose.
So that's good point to clarify kind of up front, that the term God is being used as a collective in this sense. I mean, many people can have their own use of a term, but the sensation, the feeling, the notion is the same, yes?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because the word God does mean different things to different people, and for some people they get very activated by it, from, you know, wounds they've had in childhood, religion, stuff they've seen on the planet, past life, cellular memory, which you don't even have to go there. There's plenty on the planet now to activate people. Mm-hmm. So maybe it would be helpful by sharing with the world how I define God. Because people say, well, what is God? And I say, well, God is the consummation of all the love that exists in all of creation, which is both infinite and infinitely expanding in every moment.
So was that the interpretation, or was there more? I mean, I love that. I mean,
That's how I define
God. How you would define God. Yes.
Well, you know, like everything is energy. Even like there have been masters in the past, you know, like Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi, who merged physics and spirituality through the sciences. And there are many people who can really resonate if you talk about God, what many people think of as a spiritual concept. If you talk about it in tangible, practical means and matters, because some people intellectualize the truth and some people experience it in their heart and some people experience it through life circumstance, so it's different. But to even describe in terms of physical science, you could define God, that everyone knows or might remember, I believe it was Einstein's famous quote, that energy cannot be destroyed, it can only change shape.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you think of, if you take any amount of energy and you coagulate it, make it more and more and more dense, eventually that energy can take form and it can wield power. Well, let's call that energy love. So love, if you harness enough of it and bring it all together, that energy has wields power, the power to create. And that power is known as God. So the consummation of all the love that exists, of all of creation, that totality of that is a living essence, which is God. But it is love.
Mm.
So that way I can describe it spiritually, religiously, physically, scientifically. It's still all the same. It's still all the same.
Yeah, life is life. And if we get out of the way, life is intended to create. All things create. All things stem from a seed. And if we don't inhibit it, and provide it nothing but love, it will become whatever its intended potential, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a fascinating thing to imagine, really, for anyone listening, how one's individual life would be, how life in any group or organization or planet would be if there were no inhibitions, if there were only love, if there were only the conditions that maximally support the elicitation of one's inherent creativity or one's inherent purpose. Challenges, we don't generally bump into that in the world. We've got all this other stuff going on. And you, however, are able to embody that. You are that, yes? This is who you are. This is what you are bringing forth. This is what you are, what you embody, yeah? And how has, and this has not always been your life. You've come to this path, yeah? This has been a path for you.
Well, yes and no. I mean, obviously, I was born into this, but no,
sure.
I did. But when you say come to it, I have to qualify it. I mean, I was born with somewhat of an inherent knowingness of who I was and what my mission was, but I didn't have the names, dates, titles, and that. I had a knowing of my essence and my embodiment, but I did choose, and God chose to send me here, not self-realized at birth. And contrary to what many people believe, most people are not born that way. There are very, extremely, extremely rare exceptions. There have only been a handful in the history of the world of people who have been born fully God-realized. So I chose to embody, and that was because of my particular dharma, my mission. I chose to embody in the world into the full experience of separation and then have to uplift and extricate myself from that to then be able to model the journey and the victory for others. Because, you know, it's like the reason I chose to do that was, I'll use an analogy. If, let's suppose you were in a wheelchair and you were going to a conference, and let's say there were two guest speakers, and the auditorium is filled with, let's say, 500 people in wheelchairs who want desperately to get out of those chairs to heal, cure, whatever they need to do to get out of those chairs, provided there's the possibility of that happening. But as the story goes. And there are two guest speakers in two different auditoriums. One is a PhD who's got 7 degrees and all kinds of things, and philosophy and theology and science and medicine and everything from here to kingdom come. He's speaking, and he's world famous. And I want to qualify this to any listeners that this is not a judgment of people with degrees or the intellectual process, and listen to the wholeness of the story. And then in the other auditorium, there's a man who was in a wheelchair for 20 years, and now he's walking. Which one would you want to go to?
Mm.
I'd say most people would go and say, that man was in a wheelchair for 20 years, he's walking. I want to know what he has to say. How did you do it? And can I do this? And that's why I chose to enter this world and this embodiment into the illusion of separation, so that I could go through wounds and heartache and heartbreak and abuse and all the different things, and addiction and all the things we all go through. And then through the ache in my heart, the hunger for God, that finally, you know, when most of us, when we go through life, there's some critical turning point in a person's life when they have had enough, and that they start screaming, God help me, God help me, and then, you know, asking you shall receive. And then when that window opened for me, I was that person at the auditorium looking at the speaker saying, you know, what do I need to do here? And then I just completely devoted myself to that. And then, you know, like a fireman going back into a burning building, you know, the objective is to go in and share that with others and help others find their way out of the maze or the labyrinth. I know I'm using mixed metaphors here, so bear with me. That's something I tend to do. But, go back. If you find your way out of this hopeless maze of separateness through the grace of God and the guidance of ones who themselves are on the outside, then the next thing to do, and really the only thing to do, is to go back into the maze or to call from the outside and say, hey, through the grace of God, I found my way out. Let me help you. Let me show you. But again, the onus of that journey is wholly upon the individual. You can't make anyone do anything or proselytize or, you know, preach at people. You have to just be the open door.
Right.
Be the example and be the open door.
And be receptive to it when it comes forward, yeah?
Yeah, and however it comes. It comes in many faces. Some people come dancing and singing, and some come kicking and screaming, and some come wielding weapons, attacking. But it doesn't matter to me. You know, I too say I don't care how you come, only that you come. And I also, you know, am wise enough to know that all crime, any form of crime, is only a crying out for love. People only know how to ask for love based upon how they were loved as children. And when we all understand that, it engenders tremendous compassion for ones who are behaving in a non-loving way toward yourself or toward society or for crime in general. It's just everybody's just hurting and wanting love in what most people, or many, if not most people, perceive as a love-starved, love-forgotten world.
Mm.
No, that's not I don't mean to make a blanket statement. There's infinite love in the world and infinite grace. And I mean, I live in it and I see it everywhere I go. But I also am aware of other people's experiences. Many people are in the experience of hopelessness and despair. So it's having compassion for that creates a bonding, creates an invitation, and it creates a safe place for people to then take that risk, take that step,
right,
and ask for help and reach out.
Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look out the window and see the nature of the environment in our world today and how much more the environmental context has gotten flooded with fear and inhibition and negativity and pessimism and all these different things that are constantly getting into our brains and affecting really all walks of life. I mean, this is what we talk about every week on the show, is how this pattern that we're so caught in is negatively affecting the health of really all living systems, and how that way of being is not in alignment with the nature of life. Life is not intended to be negative or inhibited in any way. I'd like to follow on kind of from that thought and maybe lead it a little bit more into what's happening in our environmental context, shifts in the world, and that duality that you say that people are stuck in. Yeah, where are we stuck?
Where you want to qualify your statement when you say where are we stuck?
People being stuck in this in the duality of being caught in a framework that keeps them in negativity and away or fear,
separation,
and separated from God, separated from the oneness, separated from the greater totality and love and embracing and interconnectedness of all things, and keeps us inhibited.
Well, what happens is, I mean, there's so many ways to answer this. I could talk for a week on this point, so I'll try to streamline as best I can. You know, just the way that our Creator built us. When we enter our embodiments, you know, two of our three levels of consciousness get primarily erased, the conscious and the subconscious, though there are levels of bleed through, and only that superconscious, the I Am presence, or the divine state, is inherent, but that becomes inaccessible. I was going to say it's inaccessible, but it's not really at birth. Children are born holy and completely divine, and it usually takes about, on average, it takes 7 years is usually the year of most children go through the break. Where they cannot any longer hold on to their full divine state because they've been so pummeled with conditional love or the absence of love, abuse, neglect, fear, negative patterning from parents, from siblings, from teachers, from friends, from society, in the collective. And eventually, you know, they fight and fight to hold on. And eventually, the break usually happens between 5 and 7 years of age for 99% of the world. And then some children can hold on till about 10. But then, you know, what happens is, as we keep getting saturated and we live in a world, I mean, it's now changing as we're now in the age of enlightenment, in the Aquarian age now. This is, you know, all, and the reason for your show and all things like this. I mean, we're coming into an age now where we're learning that we are much more than the body, and we are much more than five primary senses, which, as beautiful as they are, and they are and I mean this in the highest sense of the word, they're the crudest, and I don't mean like lousy or bad. I mean crudest as in the lowest vibrational experience of who we are as divine beings. And again, go to the scientific level. Scientists all say that we only use 4 to 6% of our brain's capacity. So what I'm talking about in what many say are spiritual terms is really the same thing. There's 95% of almost everyone in the person that is untapped. And in that untapped realm, there's so much love and so much experience of God, of divinity. But what happens is we've lived through, you know, this Kali Yuga, this dark age, where many of the sacred ways have been forgotten and have, you know, settled down into the dust, and they're now in the sedimentary layers of the earth. You know, and now it's coming. What's coming to the forefront are beings like myself, and there are hundreds, thousands of people who are teaching sacred ways for us to access that other 95%, and not lend credence to what we can only see, hear, touch, smell, and taste. And this is, I'm tying into your original question, how is it that we, most of us, believe in this duality and get caught and trapped in it, which is a beautiful way of saying it, is because we've been trained and programmed and patterned and shown that what you can experience through those five senses is only what's real.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that what you see and experience through your five senses is actually, at the level of the absolute, all that's not real. But it serves as a proving ground and a learning ground to teach us. And again, it doesn't mean forget your senses. They are to be enjoyed. But if you lend credence to the illusion, you become the illusion. Whatever you place your focus on, you become. So what has to happen is a training of one's focus and consciousness on first the concept that there is more to life and to existence than what we can see, hear, smell, taste, touch. And then once you get into that realm, then there are all kinds of ways to open up those chambers. And then as those chambers open, people start having more and more experiences of their divinity through revelation, through, you know, Shakti or divine current going through their body and coming into them, through healings of the mind and of the body, and then through surges of love that come into them, and watching things, their outer circumstance start to change drastically as the focus becomes more on the real reality. I know that sounds weird. The true reality, I should say, of creation, and less credence or focus on the illusory world, then one's experience becomes more anchored in that, and then one starts to deepen in it. And then that starts to cut those cords that keep us bound into duality and into fear and into the labyrinth, that hopeless maze that knows no way out. And that's really, really what it's all about. So it's about severing those ties, those belief systems that think that's all there is. There's so much more.
Mm.
And thankfully, it's now happening so fast. You know, again, back to the duality, people, and it's very auspicious we're having this talk today because I'm down in Orange County, California, and these wildfires completely surround our ashram from L.A. all the way down through San Bernardino, through the San Diego Canyon and down to San Diego. If you put a pin on a map, we're right at the epicenter with the ocean behind us, with the fires all the way around us. And the closest fire is, I can see it from my house. It's only about 6 miles as the crow flies. My windows are all sealed. All my cars are covered with ash. We can't, the kids are home from school. The schools are closed because we can't breathe outside. And people look at that and they go, oh my God, it's an apocalypse. It's the end of the world. And it's tragic. It is really tragic. And I'm doing prayers all day and holding ceremonies for it and praying for people who've lost their homes. And in some respects, that's, you know, the world and the universe and the Creator are sending in, these are all invitations for people to turn toward God. You know, I define suffering as a wayward humanity's incentive to turn toward God. And when we get, you know, when our resistance to surrendering to the divine becomes, gets worn down enough, eventually we just give up.
Mm.
Now, again, if you look at the simplicity of life, just look at basic life. Take spirituality and religious pursuits and aspiring, you know, to enlightenment out of the equation. We'll just look at simple physics again. In all 99.9% of cases, people have that moment, that epiphany, moments if not minutes or hours before they draw their last breath. We all know that to be so, and many who've been in the room with people at the moment of their passing have experienced that, where all of a sudden everything breaks and falls away. Love, God, whatever you want to call it, deceased people, angels, saints, flood the room. People all start weeping and weeping because their hearts are bursting with so much love. And you look at the person's face and there's total equanimity and peace. And what I am here in the world to say is, why wait till your last breath to have that?
Mm.
Why not have it now and enjoy the Garden of Eden?
Mm.
This is the most gorgeous planet in the entire cosmos. It's the only one that sustains life in this form, and there's no other planet like it, even in other dimensions. I mean, this is the epitome. It's the quintessence of God manifested. And, you know, so I say to anyone who's out there saying, I just want to go home, I want to go home. There's nowhere to go, baby. This is it. I mean, so many beings want to be here. That's why we have so much company. That's why we have so many ETs, and that's why we have so many angels appearing, because this is a garden of the gods.
Yeah.
God created this planet as a playground for gods and goddesses. And what we're here to do now is to help everyone remember that they are just that.
So at the same time that we're here to transcend the conditions of this reality, we're also here to really to spiritualize the illusion, to bring love into the illusion.
Yeah. I mean, everything is what you make of it. You know, I could walk down a street in a war-torn ghetto in the city, like in Los Angeles, and somebody could see just destruction and annihilation and madness, and I just look and I just see beauty and goodness. So, you know, it's, you know, separation is the gap between one's perception of what is and what is.
And and everything is what you make of it. There is
exactly.
There is no meaning that is written anywhere as
exactly.
Absolute. We interpret everything that occurs. And
we are the authors of meaning.
We are the authors of meaning, very well put. And with that power, then we are always, to some degree, a choice about whether we're drawn into fear and inhibition or whether we're naturally pulling ourselves into a place of faith and an interpretation of things in a way that actually serves us, and we are a choice about that. And it's when we do step back and kind of look at what's going on in the environment and see the factors that are influencing what's going on in our head, I feel that we can get more ability to separate from it when we tune into a bit more of the environmental context and realize that these things are. They are affecting us. I mean, we talk about that here. You know, the impact of the media, the impact of advertising upon our thoughts, the impact of historical relationship patterns that trigger us into negative interpretations, negative ways of being. All these things that pull us from the purity of love, which, whenever we engage in those discussions, is really the more default, harmonizing, loving place that we would prefer to be. But we find some reasons as to, you know, why we're not there.
Exactly. And those reasons are that we lend credence to our outer circumstance.
Mm.
People have to constantly go back to, and this is like a mission statement to anchor in oneself, and that's the beginning, you know, of the journey to liberation, is to realize that I am not defined by my circumstance. My circumstance might be anger or sadness in this moment, might be my house just burned today in these fires, but what I am, my unconditional permanent state, is I am an incarnation of pure love, pure joy, an embodiment of God, who in this particular moment is experiencing heartache, loss, suffering. See, a lot of people just, the victim consciousness is like a pendulum that just swings from one side to the other. Like most people, you know, before they have their spiritual awakening, they walk as victims in the world. Woe is me, look what's happened to me, life dealt me the short end of the stick. But then they have their spiritual awakening and they go the rest of their lives as spiritual victims. You know, and just, you know, justifying everything, but they're still not taking ownership of, wait a minute, there's nothing outside of me. I am the creator. If God lives in me, then I've got the full power of God roaring through my veins, and I can create my own reality. And yes, things will still happen to me. Mastery is not about what happens to you. It's about how you handle what happens to you. You know, I lost my 15-year-old son 7 months ago. He committed suicide. People think, oh, how could you be enlightened and your son died? Well, life happens. You know, and my wife's one of her dear friends. She's her house burnt in this fire 2 days ago. Stuff happens to you. It's not that I don't want people to be disillusioned to think that I'm enlightened and you're just sipping green tea by the koi pond for the rest of your life. Things will happen. Life happens to you. But what you have the power to do is to say, I choose love. I choose to be love in this moment, regardless of circumstance. What unconditional love means, or what enlightenment means, is really to say that nothing in this world, because I say so, I say that nothing in this world has the power, nor do I give it the power, to invite me to step out of love. Now, that doesn't mean I might not have a moment, but it just, the trueness, the reality of that state is that, you know, I have the power to choose that. Now, you started saying a few moments ago, we do have a choice. It really is. It is all choice. You know, in victim consciousness, people say, you know, you did this to me, you know, therefore I feel this toward you. But, you know, if you think about it empirically, you can't do it because you're on the telephone, but let's say you were sitting across from me and you got up and walked over and kicked me in the shins with all your might, with a big steel-toed Dockers, whatever they call those things, those big black boots. What's the name of that boot? Doesn't matter. You kicked me in the shin. Doc Martens, that's what I was thinking of. You got a big, fat, black Doc Martens with a steel toe, and you kick me in the shin with all your might. Most people say, this would be so angry. You'd go kick him back. You'd defend yourself. But I have a choice. I could choose anger. I could choose to kick you back. I could choose to hate you. I could choose to have some ill feeling. I could choose to forgive you. I could choose to go over and embrace you and kiss you and say, thank you. I guess I really needed that. Or I've got an infinite number of choices.
Right.
It is choice. Psychology says that emotions are pattern behavioral responses to stimuli. That's true at one level, but it's not at the penthouse level of consciousness. At the penthouse level of absolute consciousness, emotions are free will choices, and they're independent of the circumstances to which most of us attribute them. That's the reality at the penthouse level of God consciousness.
But we get patterned into our behaviors as reaction of what's going on outside of us. So the
exactly.
choice, the choice
that's
that
how everyone else reacts, and that's what we're taught, and so we believe it.
The choice that you have, should I kick you in that fashion, which I would never do, by the way.
I know.
But would I do? The choice that you have is whether or not you're going to allow my action to determine what you do.
Exactly. And why should I be so weak as to do that? Why should I give you permission to take me out of love?
Mm.
What a horrible thing to do to myself.
And in the same sense, why should we allow things that are happening in our environment that we dislike, be it political, environmental, economical, whatever, to mess with how we are as an individual being?
No, we don't need to. We can if we want to, but it's not going to bring us inner peace and fulfillment.
Mm.
Now, it needs to be really fleshed out a little. I'm glad we're on the subject, because I can already hear in my consciousness there are other questions. I can even hear people, callers who aren't even there, saying, oh, so you're saying be a doormat and let people walk all over you. No, not at all.
Mm.
There's also another space of self-love, self-worth, self-dignity. You know, that may happen once by surprise, but I'm not saying to sit there and let people abuse you. You know, like, for instance, I know a particular individual. I'll give you a good example. I always like to teach by example because it's better than theory and philosophy. I have a particular friend who, in the past, has walked around in the world in mostly a very, very angry and vengeful state. And when he comes to my house, I always open the door and give him that opportunity to come in and choose love. Because I always say one of the greatest gifts you can give is to always let every other human being gift that person the opportunity to recreate himself as love in every given moment. That's one of the highest applications of unconditional love. And not go into the, well, you always, you know, like, oh, Bill's always late. Well, you just made him late again. You just condemned him. How do you know today might have been the first day he was going to be on time? And you just condemned him. You didn't even give him a chance to recreate himself. So this particular friend who, in the past, that's why I even say when people have habits or addictions, you want to acknowledge them. You don't want to be a spiritual victim and say, I used to and I'm not, because that's denial if you have this thing. But at least speak of it in the present perfect. You know, like, say if you're an alcoholic, you don't say, I am an alcoholic, because I am they're the most powerful two words that exist. They mean, by all the power of God that exists in creations, I command this to be so. So therefore you have to be. Even if you're not drinking, you're still an alcoholic. But if you say, for most of my life, or for all of my life, or for the past 20 years, I have had a problem with alcohol. I have been an alcoholic. You're saying, right up till this moment, but I'm giving myself this moment and the moment after it to be able to have that possibility that I could choose, or something could happen that I could transcend that moment. But if you're affirming the negative in the present tense, you've just recreated it again. So this, back to the friend. This friend who in the past would walk around in such an angry, vengeful state, he'd come to my home and I'd open the door and greet him and hug him and say, come on in. And if he started being very angry and insulting me and demeaning me, I'd say, you know, this really doesn't serve. My house is a temple, and I'm here to serve you and love you, and I have enough love for myself that I don't like to be spoken to that way, and I really don't tolerate it. So I'd like to invite you into a more loving state. And we'd have this little dance, and he'd keep going, and I'd give him two or three chances and say, now, I realize that this is your choice for today, and I can love you enough to accept that and honor that, but I also love myself enough not to let you pollute me and my space, so I need to invite you to leave my house today. And he'd look at me and say, and then keep going, and I'd say, but you know what? I have a gift for you. I want you to go out today and be the meanest, cruelest, most miserable human being that ever walked the face of the earth. And he said, I can't believe you said that. You're supposed to be pure love. And I said, well, there's a wisdom in it. I said, first of all, you need to understand that every circumstance stays in our environment, in our auric field, until it's finished serving us all the lessons, teachings, blessings that we've created and chosen and brought it into our lives to teach us. So, you know, it's like the Band-Aid principle. You could tear it off really, really slowly and ooh-ah, for an infinity and have all those little hairs pull out. Or you can give it that one big, hard rip and let out an earth-shattering scream, and then, it's all better. So I said, just go for it. Whatever you choose in life, choose it with 100% of your being or choose something else. Now, I gave you many chances to step out of this angry space, angry, vindictive, filthy space, and you say, no, I want this. And I said, then do it. Go for it. Because what will happen is you'll get so sick of yourself that you'll step out of it more quickly. Rather than being a little bit nasty to a lot of people for a long time, just go out and be an ogre for an hour, and then you'll probably be so sick of yourself, you'll just burst into love.
Mm.
You know, and these are just the universal principles. It's true.
So the integration of one's own experience into their current knowing of their their reality, and then having that affect their own personal evolution or shift.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really important to choose everything with all of your being, because that's really like living in the fullness of life. You know, like sometimes people will come to the ashram, you know, some disciples or devotees or students will come, and, you know, I have a specific training day I do once a month. I mean, I'm always training people, but there's one day I do a month for the people who live in the community, and we call it disciple training. And sometimes people would say, is this required? Do I have to go? And I immediately say, no. In fact, it's probably best you don't come, because I want you walking through that door anxious for your next breath. I want this more than breathing. And if not, I'd like you to go do something you really want to do with my blessing. I won't miss you, and I won't blame you, and I won't judge you. I'm telling you from the depths of my being, you have my blessing. Go do whatever is singing to your heart the most in this moment. Go do that. Because when you follow your heart, you have to eventually become attuned to God and one with God, because the heart is the seat of the soul, and the soul is the seat of our omniscience and the seat of our divinity. Ergo, whenever you follow your heart, you are inextricably tethered to the heart, mind, and will of God, even without knowing what it is.
Mm.
So it's flawless, and that's why I tell people, follow your heart. You know, a lot of people say to me, well, how do I know? And how do I know if God, just show me, if you just prove to me, then I'll jump. And God's on the other side of the Grand Canyon saying, just jump, and then I'll show you and catch you. But, you know, God wasn't the one who left.
And you speak of saturating one's consciousness with these experiences of oneness to eventually reach this point. And so can we just talk a little bit about liberation or enlightenment or self-realization? Are these all similar concepts or a similar state that we're referring to?
I treat them as one. I know there are some masters, and again, I honor everyone for whatever they teach. But for me, that gets a little too heady, and it gets a little too confusing for people. I use them all interchangeably. Mm-hmm. Illumination, liberation, enlightenment, self-realization, I use them interchangeably. Now, I need to also qualify that by saying, again, it gets back to that delusion that many people have about enlightenment, that, you know, you suffer, and you try, and you do all these, the sadhana, the spiritual practice, and then, poof, you know, you're living in this, floating in a poppy field for the rest of your life. It's important to understand that there are as many tiers or layers of illumined consciousness as there are separate consciousness. You know, you've got the axe murderer all the way up to the devotee who's meditating 15 hours a day to attain enlightenment and who steps over ants on the sidewalk. Those are all levels of separate consciousness. But then within illumination, you know, it just keeps going. Once you're enlightened, you know, you're living in a state that's more than 50% unconditional love. That's the gravity that holds you on earth. Whereas unenlightened, the gravity that holds your embodiment on earth is fear-based. and you can have moments of oneness, of liberationness, of God-merged bliss. But because more than 50% of your consciousness is fear-based, eventually that will either wither or get snapped from you. And so many people, you know, they'll go to a retreat or they'll have an encounter with a master, an enlightened being or an avatar, and they'll receive Shakti or Darshan or something, and they'll go into this God-merged bliss, and then it might last a minute, an hour, sometimes even a day or two, and then all of a sudden they're back in the mouse wheel, and they get furious. Oh, it's not real. God's not real. See, it's all a waste of time. It's hopeless. No. It's the opposite. What you had was real. You were in that state, and partly you got that to show you that it is attainable, and this is what it feels like. Would you like more? So rather than, again, buying into the illusion, which is fear, that it's not real, or God's never been there for me, and see, anything that you get that's good is going to get taken away just like it's always been. No, it should be the opposite. Wow, now I know that it's real. Now I know, since I've had it, tasted it, I can attain it, and now I want more and more and more and more. So it's like the old glass half full, glass half empty. Focus on what you just attained and had, and find ways to get more of that. And keep doing it, because eventually, as you get more and more and more and more, the gaps between them get shorter, and it's like filling in the spaces. And eventually, you're in that state pretty much all the time. Well, and then I wanted to finish the thing I was starting to say, okay, if I may, that, you know, because God is infinite love, infinitely expanding, which is something that many people don't teach, but this, you know, it's somewhat unique to my message in the world. People say if God is everything, then how could God be growing? And I explain that through science. If you took a look at the Big Bang, the implosion that created outer creation, if all that is God, the totality of all the love that is God, and then you implode that, you have outer creation, all the planets and beings and races and animals. Well, now that you have outer creation that have burst into this separate reality, every one of those particles is ascending in every moment, which means, even by scientific law, if you regather the totality of outer creation 1 second later, it's a higher frequency than it was a second ago, because all those particles in outer creation are ascending into higher frequencies of love in every moment. Therefore, since God is the totality of that, whether it's all together or imploded into creation, the Godhead is infinitely expanding while being infinite love to begin with. Therefore, wouldn't it make sense that after illumination, your consciousness still keeps going and going and going? You know, there's no end to it. There's no limit, and that's so exciting. I really want people to get that you can never have enough God. It just gets better and better and better, and just more bliss filled. It's outstanding.
It's for me. I explain that in my life as learning to embrace the unknown and my own personal realization that it was in that realm of what I was describing as the unknown where I did all my learning. Where I gained infinitely by embracing that, and that I found that when I went only with what I did know, what was absolutely certain, that it wasn't, didn't always taste that great. It was always, you know, like, you know, fine, sure, whatever. But when I stepped into that realm of the infinite, of what I didn't yet know, that was just a freeing and a journey and just a wow, constant newness and freshness and infinite learning. And once I can just accept that's the way that life is, I can just let go.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting, too, that same risk-return trade-off, you know, applies in so many areas of life.
Mm.
It applies in financial world, too. The greater the risk, the higher the possible return you could get. That stepping into the unknown is what I'm equating with risk. And the return is, my goodness, look at that. If you stick with what's stayed, what's tried and true, you know, you could have a comfortable, steady life, but you'll never taste that exquisite wonderment and awe and just infinite thrill of existence. You got to take that step. You got to be willing to take that step into the unknown, because that's where the magic lies. God lives between the breath, which is after the exhalation and before the inhalation. That's a scary place, and that's why so few people want to go there. Because I have no breath now. There's no me there. There's no identity. There's no security. This is what the mind says. Where do you go? That's like that's the space between the trapezes, you know, with the trapeze artist. But where does the magic happen? It happens in the air there, you know, between the trapeze. And that's the same thing. That's where God lives, between the breath. And you take that step in the unknown, have the faith and have the trust to take that step, and and God will always show up every single time.
And so
if you're stepping in faith and not in fear. If you're stepping in fear, you know, you might get the epiphany, but you might have to step on a few more rakes to finally get you to say, okay, wait a minute, I'm going to trust here.
And so would you say that making that leap and achieving that critical mass within your own being of shifting from fear to love is a lot about actually really facing your fears head on?
Yeah, you really have to. The only way to really transcend fear is to go straight into them. I mean, that's the quintessential shamanic rite of passage. You go straight into it and then do that. I have an exercise I do with people when they bring a specific fear to me or to the table. I say, okay, let's play it out. And this is what the Ascended Masters, you know, taught me when I was in my training in the Mystery School. I said, let's play it out. And they would say, what do you mean by that? I said, well, play out your worst case scenario, because it's the only thing that's going to disempower this thing, because you've given it so much power, so much faith and belief and loyalty and devotion. It's like you've got this thing on an altar. You're deifying this fear. So let's play it out and say, okay, I'll make up an example. You know, let's say you're wanting to change jobs. You're feeling, you know, I just can't do this job anymore, and I want to do something else, and it's always been my dream to be, you know, a painter, you know, and I've got this 9-to-5, and I don't like it. I'm not happy, and I've been painting since I was a little boy. And why am I so afraid? And I said, well, let's play it out. Worst case scenario, what happens? And you say to me, well, I quit my job. Okay, then what happens? Well, I don't sell a painting, and I can't get started. Then what happens? I won't have my rent. Then what happens? I'll lose my house. Then what happens? I'll be living in my car. Then what happens? You still can be painting, you still can be praying, you still can be... Then what happens? I just keep going and going, and I tell people, play out the worst. Think of the worst thing that could happen. And eventually, 100% of the time, with everyone I've ever done this with, eventually they get to the end where they're giggling, they're laughing, they're at peace, they're at joy, and they realize nothing is stopping them from pursuing their dream. Because when you get to the worst, the end of the road in the worst-case scenario, what they still have, they now have themselves, they're still alive. They still have their wife and children if they're married, or their partner, or whatever. They still have their art, the talent that God put in them, whatever it was. In this case, I use painting, or whatever it is. You still have it, because no one can take that from you. And you still have the means to express it. Well, then I wouldn't be able to, if I have no money and no this, and I wouldn't be able to eat. Okay, so you're eating out of a garbage can, so you're getting donations, you're begging. What else? You just keep going. And eventually they just run out of excuses. They run out of circumstances, and they realize they end up at happiness.
Mm.
And I say, look, you know, you could get paint out of trash cans. You could paint. You could get pieces of charcoal and do drawings on boards. No one can take the gifts from you that God gave you. No one can take your happiness from you. Only you have the power to do that. And like I said, every single time people got to the end and they realized, wow, I still have me, I'm still alive, and I still have the very dream that precipitated this journey in the first place. And then what they say is, now I'm free. Now I'm free. The fear no longer has power over me, and now I can take a step.
Mm. And there's no more looking outside for excuses. There's
yeah.
no more blaming external things. And you realize back that love and God is really and has always been within you, and that you are
yeah.
the
I mean,
choice
to
engage that.
Yeah, the truth is that no one on this earth or off it has the power to take from you what God alone has deemed to be yours.
Right.
No one has that power. So why give it to people who don't have it in the first place? So easy to blame other people, but then where does it really get you? You get home at night and you're miserable. You blame someone, but you're still miserable.
Right.
So was there a net gain? No.
Now, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and I want to make sure that we just touch on a couple of places that folks can go to get more information, because it's your mission to help people remember and restore this inherent divinity and to help recapture a knowing of this. And I know there's various websites. The main site that folks should go for information on you is louix.org. That's louix.org. louix.org.
X as in Xerox.
X as in Xerox, yes.
Xylophone.org.
And there's a number of other things going on. You've got some DVDs on your website. You have a new book out.
Yeah, we have a book that's just about to be published right now, and we're just in the final stages of formatting and putting it together, and that will be coming out in the next couple of months. We've got a couple of documentary films that are in production right now as we speak. They'll be coming out next year. One of them is a one-hour interview. It'll be coming out in around December.
Mm-hmm.
And I do lead pilgrimages and retreats around the world. I'll be in Australia, in Melbourne, Australia, for Christmas and New Year's. I've got an event on the 17th at Melbourne University, and then a four-day residential retreat in the mountains in the Dandenong Ranges outside of Melbourne. It's really gorgeous.
Mm.
And we'll be eating all organic vegan food and having awesome ceremonies and meditations and discourses and wonderful healing community experience. That'll be from the 29th to the 1st of January. And then I'm starting to do some things down in Orange County, too. I've got a leading a meditation this evening. And we have occasional programs at the ashram and community service we do. And then I have a lot of discourses and training tapes, products, meditations, things that people could get through the website. We have a whole extensive product catalog. And then the website has an enormous library of my teachings. It's been the main vehicle I've been publishing my teachings for the last several years. Because I started a family 7 years ago and, you know, had children. I've got three young children and, two now with my son's passing. But I chose to shut down and stop a lot of my world travel to be with my kids in their early years, which is something that I also teach and say is very, very important. Kids need the parents, and we take them everywhere we go, pretty much so. But now I'm starting to, the ministry is starting to grow and expand, and now I'm going to start having a lot more public programs and traveling. In fact, that's how this interview came about, because I was just up in San Francisco, and so that's how that's working. We've got a foundation now. In my name, it's called Louis Dordain Prix Foundation, and that's helping to spread the teachings throughout the world through programs and projects and getting everyone involved, you know, just weaving us all together in one mind, one heart, one love, and have everybody have the opportunity to really taste this love and know that there's another whole reality right here in our midst and that nothing's coming. I really want people who are all waiting for 2012 to stop waiting. If you're waiting for 2012, you'll be waiting at 3012. Everything is here now. Every dimension of the Godhead is here right now. And as we move through our fears and transcend them, what we do is we begin to experience more and more of our inherent divinity, which means we are living in and experiencing more of all those dimensions of God that exist right now. So the fifth dimension is not something that's coming. It's here.
Mm.
And the more you're living in love, the more you're experiencing fifth-dimensional reality. And when you transcend the illusion and you're living in that all the time, then you're in that dimension. But you're really in all of them. I could choose fear any moment, you know.
Thank
but
you.
I choose not to.
I appreciate you joining us today, and it's been wonderful to connect with you. And I look forward to doing so again, either meeting you in person or coming down. I'm sure to learn more from Michael, and I look forward to connecting with you further. I thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with our audience today.
Thank you so much. I'm so blessed and so grateful, and I've been looking at your picture the whole time so I could have a human connection with you, and you're on the little photograph that was faxed to me. I've been watching your lips moving while you're talking, so I'm having my own little wonderful treat here. So thank you so much, and Michael, thank you too. I cannot thank you both enough, you two beautiful beings. And yes, indeed, Martin, we shall meet in the physical. You have my word on that, and I look forward to it.
Me as well. Take care.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to let the show speak for itself today, Michael. I implore people to go back and listen to the wonderful words of Louis Dordain Prix. He was our guest today. You can find out more about him at louis.org, louix.org. He's a fascinating, incredible incarnation of love, bringing his words and his energy to each of us here at the planet. And I just think it's an absolutely beautiful show, and I appreciate his work. And I thank him for joining us here on Reality Sandwich. We're here every Thursday at noon here at KPOO 89.5 San Francisco. You can get this show for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. And please remember that all change begins with you. Thanks for listening.
As the leaves unfold, oh, of the new world.